Welcome to this episode of the DHF Podcast. I'm a DHF board member and church planner. My name is Sam Sears, and I'm your host for this episode. And if you're new around here, a new listener, I want to tell you what DHF is. It stands for Disciple Heritage Fellowship. And what DHF does is it's a ministry of a network of churches, and it wants to help churches and church leaders fulfill Christ's mission. You can find out more about DHF at discipleheritage.org. We're going to have a sort of part two in this episode. In the last episode, we sat down with Dr. Jeremy Scarborough and looked at his book, Disney and Apologetics. We pulled out a practical idea that Disney's kind of a cultural touchstone, that lots of people know Disney and know Disney stories. But also, some of those stories point to some things that are actually true, and that can even be a conversation point to help with kind of that shared culture we have to point people to truth. Well, now we're going to get into some specifics, a couple of illustrations, and then a general thought. You know what? We're all consuming media all the time. As pastors, church leaders, Sunday school teachers, elders, moms, dads, just individuals. What do we do with training our kids or training ourselves about how we consume the media that we do? Let's join the interview, already in progress. I would love to hear, just like on a personal level, like what is a favorite Disney illustration or something like that that impacted you, and then we'll go from there.
You know, as a child, and this is why I think that there's value in this, wherever somebody is, probably like yourself or like others, is, you know, as a child, you often just soak things in and you aren't necessarily pondering them. But again, the sharing of stories, once they're there, then when you start to ponder, you can think back, right? And so if I'm referencing something that you know, even if you never thought of it like that, you can say, oh yeah, I never thought of it, but you have it. I don't have to first teach you the story. So growing up, especially through the Disney Renaissance, I probably didn't ponder a lot of what was going on. Like some people, you know, I would ponder, you know, are they trying to say that you love is always connected to a romantic interest or something like that? Frozen did a good job to kind of take that in a different direction. Or I would ponder some of the questions that might be asked at the time. Beauty and the Beast is easy to ponder when you're thinking of this selfishness being kind of cursed and this growing out of, growing away from or being transformed by love away from that nature. That kind of superficial level of pondering I would do. But probably the biggest insights or illustrations have come as an adult thinking back. And like I said, we cover a lot of motifs in the book, but one of my favorites, I think, now Frozen 2 has became one of my favorite films musically, and it prompted some of my deepest musical insights, I think, believe it or not. And I go into that one chapter. But as far as some of the other stuff I go into, I really appreciate Moana. So, and this is a good example of a different issue that Christians might run into when they look at culture. There's kind of this question of like, how do we approach it? And you're probably familiar with the models, you know, Christ against culture, Christ with, you know, Christ above culture, you know, or Christ of culture, Christ above culture. To what extent, how do I approach culture? Do I consume it? Am I antithetical to it? I have to critique it. If it's not clearly, here's the thing, really, if it's not clearly Christian, or if it's potentially non-Christian, does that mean it dishonors God and I have to reject it? And you'll meet a lot of Christians who take that approach, and you'll recognize them when they say things like, you need to burn Harry Potter books, or devil, you know, rock music's the devil, or foosball is the devil, if you know Billy Madison, not Billy Madison, if you know Waterboy,
yeah.
Cultural references, see?
Yeah.
But with Moana, I actually see a great example of why you shouldn't approach culture that way. Because, you know, you have kind of like this Mother Nature sort pantheistic kind of God, nature is God, you know. And so you could say this is like a worship of nature. The nature itself is the God. We should reject that kind of thing. We don't want to encourage that. But then you miss something really, I think, amongst the other, you can find it throughout Disney narratives, but it's just so like in your face with Moana, a theologically rich point. And that is, what is evil? When we talk about this, we think of like, what is wrong or what is the problem with the human condition? And we go into those talks and we'll point out that if you're thinking about it in the healthiest way, evil is not a thing, right? It's the privation of the thing. It's where goodness is not. And so if you're thinking from the perspective of created order, then justice, if we're going to go and unpack that term, or goodness, is when everything is as it ought to be. So a moral order is ought to be-ness. And justice is when everything is as it should be, or that which is the way it's supposed to be. So then you've got any kind of evil or wrongness whenever something is, when that order is perverted in some way, something is not as it should be, then the order is out of order, right? It's in disarray, and you've got a lessening of the good. And so if you approach Moana that way, you'll see that the whole story is telling you there was an order, and somebody acted in a way that disrupted the order. And what followed was there was a curse, and there were problems, and there was this fear of death and decay coming to each of our islands. And the solution was to set right that which was wronged, to restore the order. And that's a similar thing, even though it's being told through these characters, including a nature god. It's like the true myth, as C.S. Lewis would tell us. It's reminding us that we know that goodness means there's a way things ought to be, and that injustice means something has assaulted that order.
And you know this, and some of our listeners might have heard me talk about this before because he's a favorite of mine and somebody I cut my teeth on. I can recall J. Warner Wallace talking about how, you know, if something is true, just because something is similar doesn't mean, you know, how do I phrase that? If something is true, it makes sense that people will be kind of hitting at it. And so this is a true thing. And even if they've not got the pieces right, we can identify, hey, they've got some pieces right. We can connect them with the rest of the story. And they're hitting at something, even if they've not read the Bible in that story, they wouldn't use the term, hey, the world has fallen, or all this kind of stuff, but they're hitting at some of the right things, and we can just be that bridge to carry them all the way. And we don't have to necessarily attack the story. And unfortunately, I do see that a lot. And I was one of those kids who, although was Christian and had Christian parents, I saw lots of things on TV, things like that, that other people didn't. And later on, read Harry Potter, those kinds of things. And all that, and it's sometimes something we divide over, unfortunately, pretty harshly. But I know from my own experience that I've met people outside of the church that, because, like, I've got a Star Trek thing on my desk here, because of something culturally we share in common, I then have a bridge to meet them where they are, like Jesus met the woman at the well where she was, and then pull them a little further along. And certainly if Paul quoted pagan philosophers, we can recognize what they get right in the story and move them a little further along, recognize the beauty, because there is such beauty in some of those movies. Speaking of which, I can't get away from you without asking about one particular movie. It's popped in my head. You mentioned when you grew up, somehow, you know, then you pondered on things some more. I have this theory that the Goofy movie is the best example of like two movies in one, because you watch that as a kid and it's, Dad, why won't you let me have fun? And it's all this adventure. You watch that as an adult, as a parent, as a dad, it's like an entirely different movie. And I've been impressed going back now, watching it, at how it works on two levels better than almost any other movie I've seen. You want to comment about that? Or do you think I'm right that it works on two levels?
Yeah. I mean, it's, again, Disney is good at pressing into that. What you're saying there is that concern I was mentioning, what we can say that if we disagree with someone on like a critical theory tradition, what they're pressing into is to use the words from that movie. Sometimes we see things better when we see eye to eye, right? That movie is about this tension where the son can't see things from the dad's perspective and the dad can't see things from the son's perspective. And it's just causing this tension between them. But there's much community to be had, but they have to learn how to give a little. And yeah, I mean, I think that's one of those stories that, you know, whether it's father and son or brother to brother or whatever, you can get something from that. And, you know, the humor helps too.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Always been a Goofy fan. Well, one last question. As we consume media, do you have some advice for what we should be doing while we're watching Disney or any other film or listening to music, reading a book? Should we be turning our brain off and just absorbing, or are there some things we should be looking for as we dig in and enjoy?
It's never a bad idea. No, I would never say turn your brain off. It's never a bad idea to kind of have some, I don't know what I want to say here, but like consume with discretion. So Brian Godawa I don't remember, it's an older book, Hollywood Worldviews. He's just looking at film, but it applies to culture. And he describes some of these different ways of approaching culture. And the two he gives are like the cultural glutton, the one who just consumes unthinkingly, and the cultural anorexic, the one who starves him or herself from culture. So that would be the Christians, like, I can't have any of that, right? That would be the anorexic. The glutton just binges everything that just came out, got to have the next thing, but it doesn't really think about what's being consumed. And whenever we consume, and when we consume tons of things, whether we realize it or not, but there's often value ideas, value prescriptions, and worldview assumptions attached to a lot of those things we consume. So then the question is, when we consume, the more we consume the same kind of value prescription or idea, do we begin parroting that? Have we, to use an expression I've read along the way, are we breathing in that idea like we breathe in a cold virus and now we've got somebody else's germs and we didn't realize we got the cold? Or are we thinking about it? So I think anytime we have, it's okay. It's, in fact, I discourage you from being a cultural anorexic, right? Because again, we share, your apologetic is going to be limited by your accessibility. So the stories you share. So especially like some of the main and well celebrated, widely celebrated artifacts of culture, pop culture, you know, should have some kind of familiarity with them if you're going to have a more impact or outreach. But as you consume, just be wise, you know, just think of it. Are there any ideas attached to this? And you can, as you can see, consume, you can be thinking, you know, is there any apologetic content here that I could take, you know, into my other conversation? Or is there any theological richness here? Or you don't have to think those things. You can just read the book, but just, you know, if you catch on, just have an eye out sometimes for worldview ideas. And when you see them, just kind of take note of that. You don't have to do anything with it other than to recognize that they're there. Learn how to recognize ideas in play, so that they won't kind of wash over you and influence you. And one other, I guess, piece of advice for if you find yourself kind of teetering towards the resistance side of things, like you tend to want to resist culture, and it's understandable because sometimes, especially these days, aspects of culture can be quite in your face. But I guess one thing, when we say like take something with a grain of salt, one thing you might remember, one thing it would do well for Christians, especially Christian leaders, to remember, is that if you know that human beings are made in the image of God, and so if we bear the imago, then when we make, whatever we make, we are making in the image of a maker. And so that doesn't mean that we can't make things poorly, but if God's image bears goodness, then to make like the maker means that what we make might carry a degree of goodness. So when we see the arts and pop culture, these are human beings doing what their maker, in a sense, doing what their maker made them to do. And so we shouldn't just think trash art, you know, but rather in the same way that a child can draw a picture, right? We might not say if your daughter, 5-year-old daughter or something, brings you a picture of a horse, it's just like a stick with legs. You wouldn't say, better luck next time, right? You might say that's good, but you don't mean that's amazing. Rather, you're saying I recognize goodness there, and you know, there's still this concept of with understanding, it can grow into, you know, whatever the best drawn horse would be. So I guess what I'm saying is, when you see the arts and when you approach pop culture, and I'm not talking here about highly offensive, in your face, kind of assaulting the Christian worldview kind of material. I'm just talking about in general, if it's Harry Potter or whatever, if it's something that people like, they think it's very interesting and imaginative, but to you see things that it's either there's no Christian reference, or you see things to you that if it were trying to say, this is what Christ is all about, would be problematic, like witchcraft, right? If we were trying to say from a biblical perspective, that's fine, then that would be problematic. But to just see someone creating a world, a thought experiment, they're imitating the maker. They're making a possible world. And in the world, the characters are like this, and this is what happens. Just remember that and consider, I guess, that there might be a degree of goodness there because they're making like they were made to make.
That's beautiful. And I think sometimes as we criticize culture, we forget that the artists involved are people, and we attack them too vigorously because we don't know them, or we see them as a celebrity or a name on a book spine or something like that, and forget that they too have a soul and are made in the image of God. And just to add to that, I was, as you mentioned a daughter and a horse, my son draws, my daughter draws. But as we consume media together, we pause sometimes, and I point things out to them. And we've watched Monk and Bob's Burgers, two definitely not Christian shows. But in both cases, I've had deep conversations with a 7 and an 11-year-old because of those shows, where we pause and we talk about, look at the way Monk loves his wife. Isn't that amazing? Even though she's no longer with him. You know, what's so special about that love that we're attached to? Our Bob's Burgers, look at how this dad rallies his family. He once said, you know, oh, you're all terrible, but I love you. You know, like he's there. Look at the way he's expressing frustration, you know, and we talk about those things. Conversations are great. And if we are kind of cultural snobs, as you said, or a cultural pushback, how on earth are we going to have conversations with people outside the church, or even if our own families, if we have nothing in common to start the conversation with? So I really enjoyed the interview, and I hope to have you on again. And I'm really looking forward to digging in. This is not going in a box with my other books. I will read this before I move amongst the packing. But Jeremy, it was great to have you on. Besides this book, is there anything that you want to plug, or a website that you want to point us to for more updates if you do anything in the future?
We do have a Disney Apologetics website, just disneyapologetics.com, and we do have a Facebook and a Twitter page. But the Amazon page, although you can buy the book through the website, the Amazon page will give you access to the paperback, the ebook, and also an Audible. So we have an Audible now. People may not know about, but that's these days, that's a more accessible option for sure.
So, oh, I consume a lot of fiction Audible now, because that way I can mow or drive or whatever while I'm doing that. So that's a good option. For something like this, though, I want to take a note or underline maybe. So, but I will ask Fred to put those in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Disciple Heritage Fellowship podcast or the DHF podcast. If you want to know more about DHF, you can head to discipleheritage.org. We are a group of churches that are freely associating together, and we don't want to tell you what to do. We want to help you do what you do. So we're helping to equip leaders with a pastor's conference, pastor small groups, leadership trainings, podcasts, and written material that you can find on our website. We hope to catch you next time.